There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
Tour set, pop!
Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
I hope the dogs, those dogs barking in the back's not too much, is it?
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you, as always, for making your way here, for checking out the episode. Of course, please hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out. I put out three new interviews every single week, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover those new ones. You can do so anywhere you get your podcast from. That does include Spotify, Apple Podcast, at NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And if you're already subscribed, please do me the biggest favor. Give a rating, leave a review. The biggest thing you can do to help a podcast like this. So if you like hearing these interviews, if you tune in, even if it's just every now and again, go ahead wherever you're listening from and rating and review. That's the big help right there. Subscribe, rate, and review. Kyle Meredith here. Today, my guest, comedian Joe Gatto. You know him from Impractical Jokers. We're going to be talking about his stand-up tour that he's currently on, A Night of Comedy, and his podcast, Two Cool Moms. Joe's also going to tell us about becoming a Kentucky Colonel. We'll hear about his journey to stand up. It's something that while he had been doing with the Jokers for a lot of years, as a solo stand-up artist, really is he's only been doing that for a few years now and has already come a very long way in a short amount of time. We'll talk about the importance of age and experience when it comes to perfecting the art of comedy and having rich enough material. And Joe's also going to discuss his life after leaving the Impractical Jokers, while still occasionally working with Murr and Sal and Quinn on various other projects. We'll hear about his new kids book, Where's Barry?, and his pet adoption nonprofit, Gatto's Pups. All of that and more as we discuss A Night of Comedy and Two Cool Moms. It's Kyle Meredith with Joe Gatto.
Here I am. Thank you so much, Kyle, for having me.
In real life, you exist and you're here.
Here it is. Look at me. Well, I, you know, this is also, it's not face to face, so I could just be a very good hologram.
AI does anything these days, right? That's true. Seriously, I mean, I really have. I've been the fan through the whole thing with the Impractical Jokers and listening to Two Cool Moms over the past couple years, however long the... It's funny because the first season is like a forever season, right?
Yep. It's a year and like, it's like 67 episodes, I think we did.
Well, I'm going to ask about it here in a second. The Night of Comedy is still, the tour is still going too. You're actually going to be coming sort of my neck of the woods. I'm here in Louisville.
That's right. And I am a Kentucky Colonel. So
yes,
show me the
you
respect
are.
That's needed. Yes, that's right.
How did that happen?
I don't know. So Kai showed up and was like, hey, you want this piece of paper? We were having a show in Kentucky. This is a little while back, me and the boys. And we're in the back room. And I remember our manager came in and he's like, hey, if you guys are ready for the ceremony. And we're like, what ceremony? He's like, oh, they're going to make you Kentucky Colonel. I'm like, oh, okay. So we came out and there was a photographer. There was like the mayor or somebody of the city of note. And then it was like 15 witnesses or whatever. And it was like a whole thing. We walked in, we're like, oh, hey. And they gave us like this printouts of it. It was really, really cool. So I have this like framed certificate that I'm a Kentucky Colonel. It was really, really interesting.
Yeah. I've got friends who are colonels. I've never been coloneled.
I'll put in a word.
No jealousy there. I don't know. Like, and I don't even know what you can do. Like, do you know what you can do with a colonel or what you'd want to do as a Kentucky colonel?
You get 10% off at every retail shop. you're allowed to jaywalk. They can't do anything about that. Light littering's allowed. Besides that, that's everything else. Every law you have to abide by. I don't know. No, I think it's like a key to the city kind of thing. Like, they have a day to celebrate you, appreciate you, what you've done. And then you get to say that and talk about it. So I think it's well done.
Well, there you go. You can put that on the resume, on the tombstone. I mean, it's
that's right.
Yours.
Forever. Here lies Colonel Joe Gatto. He's finally popped. There you go.
Now, if you arrive in any of these places dressed as the colonel, I mean, I feel like you could lean into it a little bit, right?
An Italian look on the colonel. Maybe I do an Italian spin on it. I don't know. Maybe Kentucky Fried Cannoli. I don't know.
Yeah, was it a few years ago? It may have been 10 years ago when they started changing all the actors who played the colonel in the KFC. So it was like,
yeah, those are fun.
Like Norm MacDonald or whoever it was.
Q, you know? Q did a hard push to be one.
What's
he did a hard push, to get into that ad campaign. I remember he had our publicist working on it. He had people referring to him as the colonel when we came back for like a while. It was very funny.
So see, it wouldn't be so far fetched. Anybody?
No,
anybody
no. I think it'd be on point. It's on brand for Q, especially. If there's any of us that's a colonel, it's him.
I love it. I'll be excited to see this show when it comes around again. I know you've been doing this for a while. I love that you call it the Night of Comedy too, because I feel like there's no mystery in this.
No, I think people are like, what's your show? Like, you know, what is it going to be like? And I'm like, look, it's going to be an hour of laughing because that's what we got to do in this world when it's crazy. So I just put together my version of a stand-up show. I tell stories about my life, my time on the show, my friends from that show. And like, you know, just stories about our friendship. We've been friends over 30 years at this point, which is crazy. And then, stories about me too. Like if you knew me from the show, I didn't play a character. So you got to know me there. And this is a way to get to know me a little bit more, you know, which is really cool. I enjoy telling stories about my family, my kids, of course, parenting and realizing I don't know what I'm doing. My crazy stories about all my adoptable dogs and the maniac house that I live in. And of course, growing up with an Italian mother on Staten Island, which she had a big impact on my life. So I like to speak about her and celebrate her memory.
So going into, you know, making that transition, you guys did stand up together over the years, but was there a moment when did stand up really start for you?
So as I had, a couple personal things happen in my life that needed attention and I was forced to make a change, I still had to pay bills to pay and things to do. So my team, we talked and it was like, look, you've been performing live forever. You know, why don't you take a jab at stand up and see how you can do with it? Because you've been on stage. You know, I had just never been on stage by myself. You know, that's the big difference. I've always been part of an ensemble, you know, for the decades I've been performing. So it was like, you know, let me try this now. So once I started my first show was in Appleton, Wisconsin. I tried it out up there and it went really great. I had a good time. I was at a small comedy club. I performed for about 40 minutes my first time. And then I was like, okay, let me keep on cooking. I brought my friends with me, Steve Byrne and Jiggy, you know, Mark Jagarjian, who's two great standups that I respect and love and are good at what they do. They're veterans at the game. So I got some feedback from them and crafted my hour pretty quickly. Then the people started to come out. So we jumped up from comedy clubs to theaters pretty quickly. And it's just been great. I mean, I really am proud of this hour I've put together. I'm excited to be, you know, I've been bringing it all throughout the country. I'm excited to bring it there. It's just been really, really fun.
Was it much of a big change for you? Again, because going from the ensemble.
Yeah, for sure. Like being the only one on stage was the biggest change. And the creative process, right? Because it was always collaborative, you know? So now you're in charge of it all. You have to talk for 65 minutes. If it sucks, it's your fault. When it's great, it's your fault, you know? So it was like a little different to deal with that. But I'm really happy with it. I really enjoy it. I enjoy it more than I thought I would, to be honest. And then, you know, so just be able to get in front of people and make people laugh is really what I always want to do. So it's a good vehicle for me.
I mean, you hear people talk about, you know, putting in the 10,000 hours or whatever, and it's not that you haven't, it just feels like you probably did in a different way.
100%. 100%. I mean, I worked 18 years before I was an overnight success with Jokers. You know, I've been doing this thing for a while. So, you know, everybody has a different path to get there. But at the end of the day is if people enjoy watching you and you bring joy to them, I mean, you're doing the thing, right? I never really say that about people. People are like, oh, you know, do you think so-and-so is funny? Doesn't matter if I think they're funny. If people are paying out for them to come out, coming out to see them, they're funny. You know, some people find them funny. Doesn't matter. They're doing their thing. And I think that's a big thing, especially in the stand-up culture. It's like, you know, there's so many different ways to get here, especially after the pandemic. Some people getting discovered on social media, other people putting up, local shows that were performing outside. Now they're bigger deals. You know, if you look at the roster that's out there, it's just a real mishmash, mishmash, is that the word?
Mishmash?
Mishmash of it all. You know,
I mean, it was a made-up word to begin with.
Mishmash pet. It's a real good mix, let's say, of all these things. And I just really think it's really cool that, you know, there's different opportunities for people and different ways to do it.
And we'll be right back right after this.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Joe Gatto. Are you about to be blinded by the light?
The sun has moved, and this is.
Let me tell you, I'm leaning on my side because I'm trying not to.
Trying to match it. How about that?
Like,
did that work?
Take care of yourself on here. We could.
Now I look like at the end of a vampire movie.
Actually,
I have to shut the shade. Give me 1 second. That's much better.
I found myself doing this, and I was like, "Why am I leaning?"
I didn't know. I thought you were having a similar situation. I kept a fat belly in the picture.
No, it's just like, you know, when you're watching a movie and somebody's underwater and you feel yourself not breathing.
Yeah, it's
like, I'm not underwater.
I'm centered again. Sorry. Yeah, the sun completely moved behind that tree. Just as soon as we started, it was like right through.
So, what I was going to ask you next, now that you're doing this, this has got to be working a different kind of creative muscle on top of everything that you've ever done. Do you find, because I think this goes with art. And it's a question. This is not insinuation. This is a question every artist, no matter if you're a musician or whatever. Do you find that you've gotten funnier with age, less funnier, or 100%. What?
I think experience is really, I honestly think, I mean, I didn't get on TV until I was 32, 34, whatever. And I don't think I would have been on TV at 23. I don't think it would have hit. I think you need life experience to talk about, especially I think in stand-up. I mean, you need definitely, and it doesn't necessarily come with age. I think you need experiences to talk about. I think you need experiences to pull from. That happens to some people way earlier in life. Some people later. My personal thing, like I've had, you know, I have lots of stories to pull from throughout my life, but I feel like I had a real rich 20s, 30s to pull from and really developed my sense of humor, my voice. So I think that's part of it. But, you know, I always find the older people get, the more they have to say. But then I think people's messages change too. Like, you know, I don't think Matt Rife will be doing the same content. You know, in 10 years from now, we'll probably be talking about different things, about family and friends and, you know, like all this different stuff as you're at different stages, you know. So I really think that's what your comedy gets defined by, your experience.
Of course, everybody gets to be a comedian, right? Everybody gets to a public stage right out of the gate if they land there. And I agree with you. That's, you know, and it's different again for, you know, I spend a lot of my time in the music world too. And it's not the same there because you can write great songs, you know, when you're 17
year old heartbreak song.
Yeah. Just mind blowing.
Come on. Early. Yeah. Some of them go through. I mean, you look at like Olivia Rodrigo, right? And then you feel like some of those songs that she's hitting you with. And it's like, wow. I mean, even just the lyrics forget the music, right? Just look at the lyrics and look at the stuff that's being said. it really is unbelievable. I do think that any artist, I mean, you're right across the board, anything you do, even artists, you know, people get develop, you know, their artistic hand later in life once they find their medium and what they want to talk about or what they want to paint or what they want to express, you know.
But, you know, never in the past have we had in such a way where you can have that public stage right away. So, you know, we have old yearbook photos and we have old videotapes or something that we can sort of hide away if we need to. But suddenly it's like these people that are coming out of the gates, you know, really young. It's like, how are you going to feel about that in 10 years, you know?
Yep, that's right. Here you are. Welcome to the world, and it's there forever.
It's probably a good thing that you didn't have that medium at 23 years old.
For sure. I mean, you don't want to, you did not want to see a 22-year-old Joe Gatto. Oh, gawky.
Well, you've also been able to as we were talking about, kind of work this whole thing into the podcast, which I love listening to so much. It's called Two Cool Moms. And it's also funny because, you know, I'll let you talk about it more, but you all are giving motherly advice.
Yeah, we are. We're the product of two very cool mothers. Steve and I had mothers that were very, Steve Byrne, who's my co-host on that, is great. Good comedian friend of mine, hysterical, really nice guy. We've always connected, always had good combos, always been each other's confidants whenever we wanted to bounce ideas off each other in life more than creatively. So we were always, you know, just when my schedule opened up, I was like, you know, he was talking about doing a podcast. So was I. I was like, let's try one together. We started talking together. Our first version of it was called Yin Yang Parmesan because he's Asian, I'm Italian. And we were just a good mix. And then eventually we just, you know, we started finding, we were talking about our moms a lot and pulling from that. And I was like, you know what? Why don't we, you know, do what we do here? We're confidants for each other. We're and in our friend circles. So let's try to give some advice. So we like to think that we've inherited that gene of our mothers that gives good monthly advice. And the first half of the podcast, we talk about anything and everything because we're comedians, you know, family, parenting, just topic of the day. And then the next half, we take fan submitted dilemmas and solve them to the best of our abilities.
Which, by the way, you know, that format of podcasting, I mean, that's pretty normal. I usually skip out that first part. I never get bored about what you guys are doing. And
yeah,
really,
thank you. Yeah, we don't prep it too, which is good because Steve and I are very good, like off the cuff and conversationalist. And we like to like go and do that, you know, and we try to film them when we haven't seen each other for a minute, because it's nice to like have some catching up inside of it, you know what I mean? So that's kind of fun. But I always like those first halves too, because I'll just hit him with something out the gates and we'll just tangent out. We're not afraid to follow something. He's a great conversationalist, you know. He's had a lot of experiences too, which is funny. So
and the questions themselves, it reminded me in the early episodes almost of like, what was I thinking, like Reader's Digest the
type, yeah, of 100%. Dear Abby.
Yeah, right.
Dear Abby down here. Yeah. I mean, because the questions were good and deep. Like, and we don't shy away from them too. Like, it's a comedy podcast. We're comedic, but we're not afraid to jump in. Like, so like one of the big questions I remember getting in the beginning is like, and repeated a lot is, how do I make friends when I'm older? Like, that was the thing. Like, there's like a lot of lonely people out there during the pandemic. And whatnot, just like, how do I make friends when school's done? I don't like the people I work with. How do I make friends? Like, and that was like a huge thing for us. We used to get that submitted all the time. So that was like a big part of it for us, like to get these questions. And then I was like, you know what, let's really talk and be a little vulnerable in it too. So it's not just comedy. It ends up being comedic because we're both comedians. We're both funny, you know, and we like to make each other laugh as well. Steve is probably my second favorite person on earth to make laugh. Him and Sal are like the two people I can make crumble. So like when I get him going, that's a lot of fun to dig in. But like, we're not afraid to talk about, you know, our messes up in marriages, our missteps, our, you know, things that we've learned along the way with friends and having to, you know, get rid of friends from our life, bring in new ones and you know, things like that, things that we've learned, things that are important to us now as we are bringing up our own children, you know. So it's like an interesting mix. And then we'll also get asked like, what's the best cereal, and we'll fight about it for like 20 minutes. So like, you never know.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Joe Gatto. You know, you mentioned Sal, you had Murr on this first season. Is that going to be?
I had Q too.
Murr, oh, did you have Q? I must have missed that one. I was going to ask you if that was sort of the plan to kind of bring him in a little bit.
Yeah, Sal will be in the next one. We already filmed it with him. So Sal will be in the third one. Yeah, and Q and Murr had already done it. So they were in, and Sal was the one we were waiting on because his schedule is crazy too with podcasting, because he's got his, and we were just trying to figure it out. So after I did his Hey Babe and his Taste Buds, I was like, Sal, your turn, come be a mom. And he came over and did it. And it was very fun. Of course, it's very fun. Sal's one of the funniest guys I know. So it was very, very funny. Yeah.
Of course, we love seeing anything you guys get to do. But there was the game show, of course, with No More Misery.
Misery Index. That was
Index,
fun,
Misery
too.
Index,
yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which that, I was trying to say, there's no more of it. Or is there? I mean, it's because that was sort of, it's, is it
Yeah,
gone?
No, that was in the, that happened before the pandemic. We actually filmed during the pandemic for one season. It's there's no more of it. It was fun, you know. But the best thing that came out was Dinner Party. I mean, Dinner Party is my favorite show we've ever done. 18 episodes of a at-home show where we basically, like, we knew we couldn't do Jokers because of all the restrictions, and we're like, all right, well, we still, now the world needs laughter, what are we doing? We got to do something. And we came up with this format, Dinner Party, and it was like, look, we'll just have dinner together and see what happens, do a Zoom call. And we did one, and it was like, we were actually just Zooming to have dinner for before the show even came about. And like, we were laughing so much, I was like, this is fun. And we pitched it to the network, and they were like, what? Like, trust us. It's like, what are you going to do? What are you not going to put us on? I mean, we're, you're everything on your network. You need something. This is something. Let us do it. And we did it. And it was great. It was so fun. We did a couple, you know, we had so much fun surprises, and just, it really got back us to our sketch roots a little bit, which was fun. Like the Halloween episode is one of my favorites, where Q he was so into it. He loves Halloween. So we did like a Halloween episode, and he redid his whole basement. Like, it was so funny. Just really fun stuff, you know.
For the part of your story that you have made public and going through the things that you went through, the reasons why you left Impractical Jokers, to still see you all working together all the time, I mean, it's like, are you not part of it? I know you're not part of that show. I don't even know what the news is on that show, but like, does it feel different in life right now?
Yeah, I mean, I always just say we're still friends. We just aren't friends from work anymore. You know, you think about it, like you think about when you come into people's lives, like we were creative together before anybody even knew about Jokers, you know, 18-year overnight success out there grinding and doing our thing. And then after it, now the show, like that's my legacy. You know, I've developed 9.5 seasons of that stuff as my direct handprint on it, you know, and then the stuff that they've taken in a different direction or the direction they saw fit with it after, you know, but we, you know, to be such a part of anything, you'd lose any ingredient, the recipe, you know, from a recipe, it's going to taste a little different, you know, but it still feels like the same thing, you know? So it's just different to be, you know, because I was always so involved in the process, as all of us were, but like, just specifically, like I was in there with production, scheduling, and then also just creatively, like from the moment it was written to the last frame was locked for an edit, I was there. Like, I went all the way through the whole thing. I didn't sleep on it at all. So to not be that part of it anymore, that's how it's changed the most, I think. And then just, you know, it's, I'm not there, you know, so I'm not there to jump in, throw an idea. Cause a lot of it was so much, something happened in the moment. Like, you know, some of my favorite jokes were just like in the moment, or favorite ideas just were in the moment. So to not be physically there, you lose that piece of it. But as far as like the format goes and the basic overall structure and the DNA of it, yeah, of course I'll always be intertwined with it.
I mean, you guys made some magic. You really did.
And we worked creatively. People always ask now, it's like, okay, so are you going to go back? And I'm like, well, no, Jokers, my time with Jokers is done. But those guys I love to create with, we're completely collaborative. So I wouldn't be surprised. You can never say never, but I wouldn't be surprised if something down the road happened. I mean, they're my best friends, and we've been creating together long before you met us, and probably long after you remember us.
I mean, you know, there's that whole idea of thought, like, most shows don't even make it that long. Like, you know, you walked up, but it could have been, and luckily it wasn't. And for all the obvious reasons why it wasn't, it's a great show. You know, you got a great base, but like, that's sort of a normal run for a lot of people too. So that's, you know, on that side, I guess it shouldn't be so surprising. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's
yeah. I mean, you know, it's just that when people love you for a thing, they want you to do that thing as long as you can. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. Play free bird, man. Play free.
Yeah,
bird.
I know. That's it. And I'm not afraid to, you know, I throw Larry around every now and again if you need me to, but I'm very proud of my time on that show, you know, and now I'm also like proud of this thing I've done, and I'm proud of this kid book I have coming out, and I'm proud of my podcast, and I'm proud of, so it's like, you know, I was always working on stuff too. It wasn't, you know, I wasn't always just that, but once all your focus is on one project, you realize when the sieve opens, it's like, oh my goodness, I have so much creativity and so many things I want to do.
Right.
So
yeah. What's the kid book?
It's called Where's Barry? It's about a story about my son lost a stuffed animal in the house, and we had to go find it. And about it's a kid's picture book that'll be coming out next year. I did with Penguin Publishing. And I just actually signed off on the cover. It looks awesome. I'm really excited about it.
That's great. And of course you got Gatto's Pups.
Yeah. Oh my. And that takes up so much time. Now we're official. Like, you know, we're sort of an official nonprofit, Gatto Pups and Friends, which is so fun. Actually, instead of just collecting these old and unwanted dogs, right? Hey, let's get some adopted out here. So we've been doing that. Just had our 57th adoption last weekend with Cinnamon Roll, which was great. So she went out and found a home, and it's been great. It's been unbelievable. It's hard work. It's a lot of money. It's dedication, and I've been able to dedicate time to it, which has been great too. You know, actually get in there and do some work with it instead of just being like, oh, I like old dogs. It's like, no, we're doing the work here. You know, my wife Bessie runs the hell out of that thing. We've got some volunteers, we got some people that help us and work with it, and it's just been really great and really rewarding, actually, more than I thought it would be.
We love hearing about that. We've got a rescue here in the house.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. She's the best.
They're the best. Nothing loves you like a rescue dog. I'll put it up against anything. It's crazy. Cause we have one dog that we bought, Cannoli, our first dog ever, Cannoli we bought, and her wagon tail is different than every other dog's wagon tail. It's so funny. It's like, she's a little bit diva. She's a little bit like, I've been purchased, like, you know, she keep the receipt, and these other ones, like, I was living in a dumpster. Thank you. What do you need from me? Like, they're, it's really awesome.
I will admit, last weekend we had a friend who had a Christmas party, and this is not dogs, but they had one of those white elephant Dirty Santa games, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And at the end of it, we ended up, through the switching and stealing of presents, with someone brought a live goldfish in a bowl, and we were stuck with this goldfish.
Great gift. It's great.
And we had it for about a day, and realizing that goldfish is actually make large messes in water, and you have to, and we took it to the Humane Society where we adopted our pup and said, do you take fish? And they said, yes, we do.
They take everything.
So we're rehoming a fish now. It's
amazing. Yeah, we just found, my daughter for a while wanted to get we got into the rodent game. We got a bunny. We ended up getting a couple guinea pigs. Two of them are down. We did some hospice guinea pigs. So we gave them some fun cuddles on their way out. We got a mouse, hamster, Squeakers. You know, so we have a little bit of a rodent thing going on now, but I pumped the brakes on that. I was like, guys, the end friends, it's in theory. It's pups. Let's stick with the dogs. Because the guinea pigs are nocturnal. They're in the room next to me all night. I hear, they make so much noise. It's crazy.
Mm-mm. No, sleep wins. Sleep's got to win. So it's
that's got to.
You do not get to stay. Seriously, I love the work you do with that, but I love the work that you continue to do with Two Cool Moms and, of course, A Night of Comedy. Joe, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it. It's been such a pleasure.
This was fantastic. Thank you for sticking with me through my blinding stages and our technical difficulties. I appreciate you.
And my thanks to Joe, his tour, A Night of Comedy. You can find all of his dates on his various websites and Two Cool Moms, the podcast. Thanks to you, of course, for checking out the episode. Again, please do hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to keep you up to date on your favorite artists and discover those new ones. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, NPR, WFBK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions. Anywhere you get your podcasts from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And after that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show, Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of great music from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. It's lots of the best in new music. There's music news, bonus interviews as well. One of my recent shows, had the music of Billie Holiday, Ricky Lee Jones, Paul Westerberg, Lou Reed, Living Color, XTC, U2, Starbilly, Wet Leg, Collective Soul, Sheryl Crow, India RE, and my interview with Caleb Followell, lead singer of Kings of Leon. Just an example of what you get every weeknight starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the old social media sites, where the address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
The world has seen me fall apart on television in high definition for a decade, so it's fine.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.